Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Boston is one step closer today to having a new memorial to honor the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., the slain civil rights leader, and Coretta Scott King, who met in Boston. The nonprofit MLK Boston, in partnership with the city, unveiled five designs today to remember and honor the couple's relationship. In addition to the monument, the group plans to create a new educational center in Roxbury to train activists and to start an endowment for MLK-inspired programming at the 12th Baptist Church. To tell us more about all this, we have Maria Garcia in the studio. She's senior editor of The Artery, WBUR's arts and culture team. And it's good to see you, Maria. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Anthony.
So why commemorate the relationship between the Kings instead of, say, his time as a pastor, an organizer, or a student in Boston?
Well, Anthony, I don't think you can talk about Martin Luther King Jr. in Boston without talking about Coretta. He arrived here in 1951. He met her only a few months later in January of 1952. And Coretta's legacy over the years has been really tethered to Martin. But when they met, she was more politically involved than he was. And after his death, she did more than just protect her husband's legacy. I think she really expanded it and kept it relevant. And everything Martin accomplished, he did so because Coretta wasn't his helpmate, as she has so often been portrayed, but I think his equal partner. And none of the memorials really capture that.
Right. Really interesting. And Maria, you put together a lovely report on their relationship, how it started in Boston. So let's listen to a little bit of that and then come back and talk some more.
In a way, Boston is the place where Martin Luther King Jr. accelerated his life's work as a civil rights leader.
This is the first time he sort of stepped outside the limelight of his father. His father was quite a powerful and popular minister, Martin Luther King Sr., and Boston is really the place that Martin established his identity as a leading thinker, philosopher, as a religious leader.
That's Paul English, the entrepreneur who founded MLK Boston, the nonprofit working with the city to build the King Memorial on the Boston Common.
And it's here that he met Coretta. They fell in love here. They dated. They courted in Boston. When they got married, this is where they begin their lives as newlyweds.
King Jr. came to Boston in 1951 to earn his PhD at Boston University. And by January 1952, he dated quite a bit. He wrote in his autobiography that he had started to become cynical because he wasn't particularly fond of the women he'd met. Here's Reverend Liz Walker, pastor of Roxbury Presbyterian Church and co-chair of MLK Boston.
He courted lots of women in Boston. I don't want to say he was a playboy, but he was looking for a wife. So he met lots of other women, but she rose beyond them all.
A mutual friend introduced King Jr. to Coretta Scott, who was studying at the New England Conservatory of Music.
When they met, he fell in love almost instantly. She did not, and I love that. So he had to kind of court her.
King Jr. wrote that he knew he wanted to marry Coretta after their very first lunch together, when they spoke about social justice. Coretta was already an activist in her own right when she met King Jr. She grew up in Marion, Alabama, where white neighbors burned her childhood home. And though her father owned land, and later a general store, she still faced poverty.
She came up in really horrible situation concerning race, growing up in Alabama and, you know, having to pick cotton and really kind of struggling as a child. And her own sensibility about justice was profound because of her roots.
Martin and Coretta married in June of 1953. She made the word obey be deleted from their vows, a rather anomalous demand for a 1950s wife. And their life as a joint force for justice began in Boston. Both of them from the South, they recognized the more progressive attitudes of the North, but also its cloaked racism.
And the estrangement of the races in the North can be as devastating as the segregation of the races in the South. It is one thing for a white person of goodwill in the North to rise up with righteous indignation when a bus is burned in Anniston, Alabama, with freedom riders.
This is Martin Luther King Jr. speaking at a Ford Hall forum in Boston in 1963.
But it is just as necessary and important for white persons of goodwill in the North to rise up with righteous indignation when a Negro cannot live in their community or their neighborhood because of certain restrictions and agreements.
And later, Coretta, still mourning her husband's death, took his place at Harvard's Class Day in 1968, the first woman to do so, calling on mostly white students to mobilize against injustice.
Your generation must speak out with righteous indignation against the forces which are seeking to destroy us.
Erecting a memorial of the Kings on the Common ensures they take their rightful place in Boston's storied history, says MLK Boston founder Paul English.
I mean, I think if you look at the Freedom Trail and think about who was honored on that, I think Martin Luther King should be honored equally, if not more, as one of the leaders who've come out of Boston.
Reverend Liz Walker says the memorial is also a call to action, a reminder that the King's work is not finished here.
That battle is ongoing, that what the King stood for is still real right now. It's almost as if their voices are as strong today as they were back, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
And the Reverend Liz Walker ending that report from WBUR's Maria Garcia, who's back with us live in the studio to talk about what the memorial on Boston Common might look like. And Maria, tell us first about the five designs that were unveiled today. What sets them apart?
So, Anthony, I'm going to try my best to describe them, but I should tell you we have renderings on WBUR.org that do them justice. Mm-hmm. But let's start with the first one. It's called Empty Pulpit Monument. It's by artist Barbara Chase Ribot. So it's like an empty stone pulpit with a searchlight beacon erected on top. Then there's artist Hank Willis Thomas. His design for the memorial is a 22-foot-high bronze sculpture of the arms of both MLK Jr. and Coretta Scott King embracing each other and also enveloping visitors below them. Then we have Yinka Shonibare, and their design is called Avenue of Space, which is a walkway with a 30-foot mosaic fountain in the middle and then inscribed benches surrounding it.
Well, they all sound pretty impressive. And two of the potential memorials are designed by artist-architect teams, right?
Right. So all these artists are working with either a design firm or a gallery or an architectural firm. Christoph Wodiska and Julian Bonder, they're an artist and professor team from Cambridge. They designed two beacon towers that light an amphitheater and mounds for public seating on the Common. Then artist Pendleton is working with David Ajay, and he's the architect, actually, Anthony, who designed the National Museum of African American History that's fairly new in Washington, D.C. And that plan would build a raised open structure of black stone, kind of looks like a big bridge that would also serve as a platform and amphitheater for residents to look onto the Common.
Wow. Now, on Radio Boston about a year ago, we spoke with Paul English, who founded MLK Boston, about what he envisions for the memorial. So here's what he had to say.
I would like to make sure that visitors, whether it's local Boston residents or tourists from out of town, when they come upon this memorial, I want to make sure they're inspired, but they're also challenged a little bit.
What do you think he meant by that? I mean, how do you think these pieces challenge their viewers? And do any one of the designs accomplish this more than the others, in your view?
Well, Anthony, all of these pieces are very, very conceptual. Every material, every detail symbolizes something. For example, the empty pulpit in artist Barbara Chase Ribot's piece symbolizes MLK's silenced voice. The raised bridge in Adam Pendleton's design represents sort of a spatial metaphor, the mountaintop that the King spoke about, where you can see the history of past struggles. So when you learn a little bit about the sculptures, it does make you contemplate the King's legacy more deeply. But then there's also just like the physicality of these pieces. They're imposing and big. And I think that kind of halting grandness in public spaces can be really powerful.
Hmm. Now, the public has an opportunity to comment on all five of these designs, but it's going to be up to MLK Boston's Arts Committee that will make the final decision here. How much do you think the public's input will have on the, how much input will the public have on the final choice?
Well, I can't really speculate on that. But I can tell you, Anthony, that I don't think MLK Boston would have had more than a dozen community meetings and expanded its plans as a response to that public input if it wasn't taking the community's comments in good faith. Also, though, Paul English told me that popularity doesn't necessarily equal good public art. So MLK Boston is taking into consideration public input, but it's also using art history, aesthetic value, timelessness, and other themes to inform its decision.
Well, really interesting project. That's Maria Garcia. She's the senior editor of The Artery, WBUR's arts and culture team. Thanks, Maria. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Anthony. My pleasure.
And the plans are now on view at the Boston Public Library in Copley Square and the Bruce C. Bowling Municipal Building in Dudley Square until October 16th. You can also check them out at our website, radioboston.org. And that's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.